Are you suffering from back pain? Well, I've got the thing just for you. 15 surefire tips for relieving back pain, plus 192 others just in case, volume 1, available at Amazon.com. Over 30 million Americans are suffering with back pain at this very moment. The vast majority of these cases are either caused or exacerbated by common lifestyle factors. Many of the same factors may be causing you pain right now. Join board-certified physician Andrew Kirshner as he guides you through the parts of your life where these problems occur and gives you simple, safe, and effective solutions for these common daily pitfalls. In this fun and informative book, you will learn how to identify the aspects of your life which may be causing you pain, how to create a back-friendly environment, how you can improve your pain by improving your sleep, ways to make a pain-free commute, how you can perform daily activities without making your pain worse, and much more. Andrew Kirshner is so well respected in the field of back pain relief. He has, famous clients such as DJ Jazzy Jeff. He has done many talks and lectures at universities in the UK. He has appeared on QVC demonstrating back pain relief products, and that is because he is an expert in his field and people trust him. Also, check out the 5-star reviews on Amazon.com. This is the book that you need if you suffer from back pain. That's 15 surefire tips for relieving back pain, plus 192 others just in case, volume 1, available at Amazon.com in paperback. Check the link below the show for more information. And welcome to another episode of Turn Chuckle on BBG Wrestling. I am Pablo, and with me is I've run out already. Is the wink to my pink?
Oh, God,
I know.
Can I be the dun to your well?
Okay.
Can I request that?
You're the dun to my well. It's Foxy from Grapple Arcade. Hello.
So privileged. How are you doing?
I'm all right. We've got to do these at more sensible times, I think, because we have no sleeping pattern. You know what I mean? And I'm used to it by now. I mean, we made the announcement on Monday that after the Topengal interview that Sid will be next Monday, which is insane. Psychotic as well as insane. And I did that at 1 a.m. You know, you're kind of at the mercy of the wrestlers, basically, because they all live in, California or New York, or in his case, Arkansas. And, he has his own podcast coming out as well, and he had his guy come down from Canada, who was very nice, and set everything up. And, they're very excited for people to hear that. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about another... Well, the son of another member of the Four Horsemen, Brian Pillman Jr. This is like a special episode that is getting put out there early. Oh, we're just so generous, that's the thing.
Yeah.
We're generous with guests. Brian Pillman Jr., who has, he's only been wrestling a couple of years, but...
2017, man, it's absolutely nuts.
Yeah, 2017, but also with an injury in there as well. I mean,
he announced it, but I mean, he didn't make his debut until 2018, did he?
Oh, really? Brilliant.
Yeah, well, he made his debut in 2018, I think it was for CZW, but he made it in 2018. He announced in 2017, I'm going to be a wrestler. And then a year later, he's a wrestler.
Well, there you are. Can't argue that. Well, the thing is, as well, I mean, it's no secret that some of these interviews were recorded a little while back as well. But
yeah, absolutely.
In terms of the general questioning as well, I try not to make it dated if possible. He probably talks about matches at the time and stuff like that, but it certainly doesn't take away about from the chat that we have, because we. It could have been very easy for me to go, oh, I love your dad, for ages. Because
you're trying to tell me the first question you didn't ask him was, what day is it? And I love your dad.
What's your favourite colour? Oh, your dad's great. I obviously would be a fool if we didn't talk about his dad. And he's happy to. And he's one of those second generation wrestlers who happily... you know, flies the flag for his dad and everything, and whilst also forging his own career as well.
Really interesting, like, the sort of the dynamic between, obviously, the legacy of his dad and everything that is that Pillman Senior, if you like, kind of, you know, brought to the table for us mere wrestling fans. And where Pillman Jr. is going is really, really interesting, because it's one of those things where, you know, we've just said there candidly that he's announced, I'm going to be a wrestler in 2017. He becomes a wrestler in 2018, and he's a bloody good wrestler. Do you know what I mean? It's nuts. It's like, you know.
It is nuts. It's kind of weird as well that probably about 10, 15 years ago, it seemed like, and I mean, it's definitely a WWE thing, but they kind of try to separate if a son or daughter came in, they tried not to acknowledge too much that they were related to that wrestler, sort of thing. Understand.
It was a weird situation. Like, they were doing it, well, not even that long ago, with the likes of, who was it? Oh, Hennig, for example, Kurt Hennig's son.
Well, I mean, yeah, and
it was just kind of the way that they kind of did it. And obviously, like, Bray and I and Rotundo and people like that, they're like, and fair enough, completely, you know, it's not an issue. Obviously, it's not an issue. But, I mean, it's not like, it doesn't have to be done. It's interesting to see that people also want to do it the other way around, like Ted DiBiase, for example. Mm-hmm. They've gone down the route of wanting it to be noticed.
I think wrestlers now generally,
it's interesting both ways.
Absolutely. Well, I think wrestlers embrace it a little more now than they did. Because I mean, nostalgia's in, obviously, and you know, they are large shoes to fill a lot of the times. But also, why not? You know what I mean? You know, people are, why not be proud of your family heritage and so on? I mean, especially, you know, I love Brian Pillman so much. Like, just every part of his career is just captivating for me, from, you know, Flying Brian to the amazing stuff he did in ECW to, you know, obviously the Horseman, it's WWF
the foundation stuff as well,
as short-lived as it was and all that. But and it really was a cool thing to be able to talk to his son and to kind of philosophize a little bit about wrestling as well. It's kind of, you know, I like doing these kind of interviews where I can ask questions. You know, I try not to, I certainly wouldn't like critique wrestlers, you know what I mean? Because I am not an athlete by any means, but and it's kind of a fine line to draw sometimes when you like sort of talking about things that expose wrestling and all that kind of talk about the psychology of wrestling and stuff like that. But it's great to hear it sometimes from, you know, such a skilled pro.
Yeah, but wrestlers aren't that bothered about speaking about that anymore. It's been out there for a long time, obviously.
No, absolutely.
But they want to speak about it. And it's nice that they still are willing to speak about it, I suppose. And the fans of it themselves, and that's the great thing about something like a lot of the current generation. Like, they're clearly massive fans. They're not pretending that they're not. If that makes sense, mm-hmm. They're quite from the people that we've been looking up to speak to, at least anyway. And I think one of the really interesting things is about Pillman, is like Pillman Jr. That is that clearly, you know, without trying to have any, hopefully this will come across the right way, is that the influence of his dad, not just on him in terms of the way that he looks, mm-hmm. in terms of the way he conducts himself, but also in the sense that it's obviously been a positive thing for him, in the sense that he was trained by Lance Storm. He went through that thing probably because of the fact that, you know, there's family connection there, and Lance is more than happy to train him. You know, he doesn't have to join the orderly queue, so to speak. Mm-hmm. He's been trained by Lance, and then from there into CZW. From CZW, he did some stuff with MLW with our old mucker, Mr. Kevin Sullivan.
Yeah.
And I think he was at AEW as well, like in May, wasn't he, for pay-per-view, their first pay-per-view.
He was. I was really excited to see him in that Battle Royal, but I was like gutted that he was kind of just another person in the battle royal sort of.
Well, you know. I think that'll develop though. I mean, it's the fact is that we can never forget he's 2 years into it. He's been kind of thrust into some of the bigger indie promotions, if you like. He's straight in there. He's not messing about with it. He's not sort of treading water. He's getting involved. He's getting his hands dirty. But he's a pleasure to watch as well. He's such a good talent. You can just tell there's a hell of a lot more to come, which is really what's exciting about him.
Absolutely. And I mean, since the interview, he's had matches with Kevin Sullivan and Jushin Thunderliger as well, which is just like you could almost shed a tear, you know what I mean, at how beautiful that is. And you know, his Instagram's a lot of fun to follow as well. But speaking of social media, where can people find us?
Well, at present, we are having a website devised. I'd love to pretend I'd know if it's ready by now, but I don't know. I've got no idea as to when this goes out. So, at the moment, you can get onto Grapple Arcade on Twitter, @GrappleArcade, and you'll find a lot of info about what we're doing with the team that is, and the events that we put on, and the things that we talk about, and the interviews and whatnot will all be announced on there. But alongside that, we've joined forces, obviously, haven't we, Pablo? Like ourselves at Grapple Arcade, myself and Pablo, and likewise at Turnchuckle, have joined with the Broken But Glorious podcast team, and we have joined the mothership that is, and created the mothership that is, the BBG Wrestling team, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, on Twitter, @BBG Wrestling. The website will fall under the same name as well. It's coming across very, very soon. But also, check us out on YouTube as well, Grapple Arcade. You'll find some really trippy little cool videos on there that we've done with a few different wrestlers in relation to old school merchandise. So give it a look.
Yeah, same with Instagram as well. Turnchuckle on Instagram, where you will find guest announcements as well as merch reviews and all that stuff. So, without delaying any longer, this is Brian Pillman Jr. It's very rare to be able to interview an American guest not at 2 o'clock in the morning, so I do appreciate that. Where are you calling from today?
I'm out here in Cincinnati, Ohio, but really I live in the Kentucky side, so I live in the state of Kentucky, right near the Cincinnati airport, but we refer to this area as the greater Cincinnati area.
So I'm guessing your family is pretty Cincinnati-based, since that's where your dad was from.
Yeah, so I was actually born in Atlanta, you know, during the WCW days.
Ah.
I was born during the Hollywood Blondes era, right?
Mm-hmm.
In 93, September of 93, the Blondes broke up in October.
You're making me feel old now.
And I think after my dad realized that he had the perfect child as a son, you know, he decided to settle down and up in northern Kentucky, Cincinnati area, because that's where he's from. Mm-hmm. So he's actually from Norwood, Ohio, which is just a little bit norther in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And so it's generally always been from this area locally, you know, so I never really spent too much time in Atlanta. I was maybe 1 year old when we decided to move back up here to Kentucky.
And
the rest of this year.
Yeah, and I know that you've done a few interviews recently. So, I do apologize if I've asked you stuff that you've probably been asked a million times at this point. But one thing that has unfortunately happened recently is your shoulder injury. How's it holding up?
Yeah. So. I'm curious how so many people found out about it so quickly.
Well, see, that's the thing. You told me about this, and then I was looking through your video updates to see if you
posted. Oh, yeah, I told you,
Yeah, but but come on, it's wrestling. Everyone knows everything at all times, so, I guess.
Oh, you're right, yeah. And, you know, it's one of those things where it seemed really bad at first, but the more we looked into it with doctors and stuff, it turned out it's only a few weeks, you know, that recovery, so not as big of an injury as I thought. You know, it is a damage to the ligaments and the AC joint of the top of the shoulder. So it really has nothing to do with the mechanism of the shoulder at all. It's just, you know, it's like your collarbone and where it attaches, you know.
So are you using this as a reason to sort of like not work out for a few days now?
You know what? It's tough because, you know, you get these little injuries and some of them are more severe than others. And, you know, a lot of times I work out upper body, but, you know, there's no reason I can't go in there and do some squats and strengthen my knee because, I injured my knee so much earlier in my career. So it's like if you're not nursing one injury, you're strengthening and rehabbing another. You know, it's a constant. It's just like maintenance on a car. You know, when you're a pro wrestler, your body is your lifeline. Your body is your career. So you have to constantly work on it and update it and keep things moving. So.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, see, the trick is because I am not even remotely athletic and I've never had an injury. So that's kind of, you know, that's the trick to getting through life is not be remotely athletic.
Yeah.
Eat lots of ice cream.
Just be a sedentary being and you'll never have to worry about getting injured.
With regards, I was always wondering about this because with your social media, you're using that as a way to obviously connect with fans, but do you use it as a way to almost refine promo skills and stuff like that? Because, you know, the videos can only be so long and all that kind of thing. You have to get your point across. Like, has that helped in any way?
Yeah, so that's one tip I give guys, you know, even higher level indie guys that I see that they, you know, they can do all the moves, they can do everything in the ring, but they just have no character, they have no charisma. Mm-hmm. And I kind of put that over. I'm like, look, guys, everybody's got a cell phone. Everybody's got a way that they can record themselves and put themselves over in a way that's, you know, they can do it on social media or you can do it privately and review your own stuff. But like, you know, I like to utilize the social media because oftentimes you do get reactions out of people or people replying to what you're saying and stuff and buying into whether it's a shoot, what you're doing that day and you're just going about it in a character kind of way.
Yeah.
Or maybe you see something and it gives you an idea for a joke or something. So maybe you work it a little bit and exaggerate it a little bit more and put it over and, you know, just work on stuff like that. 'Cause that's what wrestling is. Everything in wrestling has some truth to it. We just, you know, we blow it up a little bit
and
make it more entertaining.
Absolutely. It seems like from a fan's point of view now that the real life side of wrestlers, because everything's so open on social media, is just as fascinating, if not more, than what goes on in the ring. But and obviously a degree of realism within storylines because, you know, fans are exposed to a lot. I'm not going to say fans know everything. They know what they're exposed to, sort of thing, or what wrestlers will allow them to, you know, because there has to be a degree of mystery there somewhere.
And honestly, it's never been a better time to be a worker because we can use social media to work people because they think that everything they see on the internet is true, right?
So. Yeah.
It's not very hard as long as you stay within the context of what's believable and you can really forge up some backstage stories and put them out there and people will find it, you know, people will think it's real, like it's a shoot, and in all reality it's just an angle, you know what I mean? So there's a lot you can do, especially like if you look at like Austin Aries and Johnny Impact, it's like They're playing off of the, you know, they're playing off of the narrative of SJW and veganism. You know what I mean? They play off of these real traits of these real people. You know, him calling his girlfriend fat or whatever.
Yeah.
And when they use a medium like social media and they seem like they're serious, it gets people riled up. And those people are just getting worked, you know? So you just got to be careful. Anytime a wrestler tweets or anytime... Even WWE, you know, like sometimes people come back or they get injured and then they come back all magically like they're the Superman, you know what I mean? You got to wonder how much of it's a work or how much of it was a shoot that was shot into a work or maybe a work that got worked into a shoot, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. But do you think it's maybe a bit too... like the fans and I probably
I think the lines are blurred more now than ever.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. But and I agree that that's a good thing, but do you think that there's almost too much analysis in terms of is that a work or is it a shoot instead of kind of just enjoying it sort of thing? Because if everything I guess was even like a worked shoot, then nothing would become a shoot anymore because everything is in that style. It, like, sort of a shoot almost has to stand out from everything else because you know everything else that's going on is a storyline, but this thing, this particular issue is real. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
The way I get by that is I just, I try to believe every single thing I do in the ring, and I try to believe in every single thing I say. I almost try to just believe my own shit.
Yeah.
To the point where you never, you know, you always think I'm serious, right?
Yeah.
But then, you know, if all else fails, I'm a professional wrestler, right? So if I say something that offends somebody, right, I'm doing that because I want to get a reaction. You know what I mean? I'm not really trying to, you know, like, be a shoot asshole. You know what I mean?
So, and
but, sorry, but it's cool because I can just be it. Like, I can just be a shoot asshole.
Yeah.
But I have the safety net of saying I'm a pro wrestler.
Well, that's the thing as well. Like, I'm sure
a lot of wrestlers.
Nah, that's okay. See, I've got a cat who's making
noise. No. Okay.
It's okay. I can cut that. It's
No, you're fine. Just the dogs. We're just checking on them.
Yeah, my cats are making noises as well. So, so do you find as well that if fans have a perception of a wrestler as well, including yourself, that it's easier to kind of live up to that perception, whether they do think you're a dickhead or something like that. You know, if it generates the kind of heat that you want, then it kind of makes your life easier in a way.
Oh, yeah. The best promos in wrestling, you know, the best characters are when there's always something real
mm-hmm.
that's behind it, something real that's attached to it.
Well, I'm not just saying this because you're here, but no one epitomized that more than your dad, especially during the mid-90s period when it really needed something like Brian to shake things up and make things real. And don't get me wrong, I'm a huge New Generation fan, but and it's kind of crazy to think that your dad came in during that time. But I think he is one of the big reasons why I hold that period, you know, and obviously WCW around that time and ECW in such high regard. So apart from your dad, who are your big influences when it comes to promos?
Yeah, I feel like I live and breathe a very Chris Jericho kind of mindset. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Like he's pretty much always, he's always believes that he's larger than life, and he pretty much believes for the most part everything he does and says, and he's not afraid to say no, and he knows his worth, and he gets the job done inside the ring and outside the ring. Wonderful businessman. Chris Jericho has been a great inspiration of mine.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you sort of on the indies at the moment, do you largely wrestle as a babyface? Just because obviously the name will elicit a positive reaction. So is it natural at the moment for you to be a babyface?
Yeah, for the most part, most of the time it's when you're more over than the other guy.
Yeah.
You have to be the babyface.
Sometimes
you'd be surprised. I've had like, you know, tons of babyface matches, but I've had a few recent pretty solid heel matches, but it came down to the babyface had to be very over in that particular area.
Uh-huh.
Or like, for instance, I wrestled a guy with Bell's palsy. His name's Gregory Iron.
Uh-huh.
And so his right arm is all gimmicked and like spasmed out, but his left side of his body works just fine.
No one is
going to be very easy to get heat on him because, you know,
oh, well,
he's like the handicapped hero, right?
Yeah. That's incredible that he is able to wrestle. And you know, I know not.
It's just his one arm, but he's very good. You know, and he gets a lot of sympathy, and he sells really well. And he's also not afraid to cross the line with the disability. You know, so many people are afraid of offending in today's world, but Gregory is perfectly fine with, you know, as a heel, like taunting his disability, you know, making a funny movement with your arm to make it look like his arm, or, you know, you miss an elbow with it or something.
Well, do you think that it gets to that point now where you maybe outside of the moves to elicit reaction, you have to maybe take things a little further than they ever have been before in terms of like maybe making a crowd uncomfortable or getting real heat sort of thing? Or do you think that it's something that you know, no matter how much someone may not like you at a show, they know it's a wrestling show sort of thing.
Are you talking about, like, crossing? Is your question about, like,
in terms of, like, sort of
crossing that line and when and where?
Yeah, because obviously, you know, a lot of lines were crossed in the 90s to the point where people almost became, I guess, used to it sort of thing. And it took a lot to then shock people, I guess. And then maybe the line had to transfer into using moves to shock people instead. Do you think it's come back to the personality side of it and actually using real life issues like a handicap or even like a family history or stuff like that? If people know about it,
I'd say it definitely depends on the context and the crowd.
Yeah,
but I will say that anything, whether it crosses the line or not physically, you know, with the danger and stuff, or whether it comes to, like, you know, something like making fun of a disabled or a misogyny, or, you know, if it's done well and if it's done confidently and if the performers feel uncomfortable doing it, then the crowd is going to feel uncomfortable watching it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if you go out there and you put on a fucking Grammy award winning fucking performance of this angle that's very controversial and over the line, people are just going to be on the edge of their seats watching it, right?
Yeah.
But if you go out there and you don't fucking confidently perform the way that needs this, you know, said, you know, for like, and also you just got to know where the line is. Like, if it's a big ass build and, like, everybody, you know, it's building up on social media and everybody's following the story, then maybe you fucking finally cross the line. But, you know, if it's just another indie show and you're calling someone the N-word in the audience, you know, that's not good, you know?
Yeah, no.
You're just getting cheap heat, you know what I mean? Like, but it's like, if you fucking, you know, if you've got this angle built like me and Gregory Iron did, where we had a nice social media build where I, you know, I said, you know, he's got Bell's palsy. He doesn't belong in a wrestling ring. He can hurt somebody. And I make it sound shoot, and I'm like, oh, well, you know, my father would be ashamed that they allow people like that in the ring, because in his day, it was only pro athletes. Like, you couldn't be a cripple and get in the ring, you know? So it's like, there's some truth to it, you know, and you got to have some, like, emotion and stuff into it. And then the people get worked and they get emotionally invested in it. But if it's executed well in the match, you know, and the match tells a story as well, and it's not just if a spot fest with cheap heat, then the people will respect it, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It's like when you ask out a girl on a date, and if you're not very sure about it, they're gonna be repulsed by how nervous you are, and they're not gonna want to go out with you, right? But if you do it with confidence, and then they can't say no, right?
And I'm sure you've never had that problem.
Never, ever.
So yeah, and you know, I was going to ask you about this hair product. What do you use? And by the end of the match as well, can you keep that, like, sweet ass mullet in perfect shape, or does it just kind of go to shit?
Yeah. So believe it or not, I tried to quit using as much product because I was getting dandruff.
Right. Okay.
But I usually shampoo it with something good. But I always air dry it, so that way the curls come out.
Uh-huh.
So I never dry it with a towel or a blow dryer. Now I'll blow dry the top to get the top to, like, stick up. But I almost always air dry it. And, it does get a little frizzy and unkempt in my matches, cause I'm a very sweaty wrestler, and that's also what kind of contributed to my injury.
Right.
Is that I'm so sweaty. My other guy, the other guy was sweaty too. So when we were up in the fireman's carry position in our match on the top rope, he was standing on the second, but I was standing on the top to get in the fireman's carry position. We just slipped and we slided, and you know, things didn't go our way. So just those little factors you gotta think about, and
Yeah.
And you can see the progression of my hair in a match. It starts off all nice and feathered and and layered and juicy, and then it gets real frizzy towards the end.
So is that something, because obviously, again, I'm not a wrestler, but with you working so many different indies, are you having to sort of test out the ring, or are the rings like dramatically different per show? Or
yeah, it was actually that Sunday when I got injured, it was actually one of the nicer rings I've been in. They had very tight ropes.
Yeah.
And a lot of times at indie shows, the ropes will spin and slide, so you really can't do as much springboard stuff as you want to be creatively do, you know?
Yeah.
But this ring, the ropes were better than I've had at like some higher level indie rings. Like it was a nice ass ring, really good thick tight ropes. We just got too sweaty. But yeah, you always want to check out the ring when you get there.
Yeah.
That's like the first thing you do when you show up at a new place.
So, and speaking of magnificent heads of hair, you recently had a match with Carlito. So, it probably sounds like a cliched question, but do you have immediate unspoken bond with like sort of second generation wrestlers, even if you've met them for the first time, sort of thing?
Yeah, there is kind of a cult like kind of club, if you will.
Yeah.
All the second generation guys generally help each other out. There's never too much heat, and you know, a lot of them, there's a lot more than you can count. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of people don't think, you know, they think, oh, Pillman Jr. and Cody Rhodes and stuff, but there's a lot of guys that maybe they didn't make it, or maybe they don't have the look, or maybe they don't even have what it takes to train.
Yeah.
But, and there's some guys that they had a shot, you know, and it just doesn't always work out. You know, I'm not going to name any names, but
no.
Not every second gen guy makes it or has what it takes to do this job. So,
mm-hmm. And did, I don't know if you would, I guess you would know, did Brian and Carlos ever work together? Like, I don't think they would have crossed paths, would they?
No, you know, I'm not quite sure. I didn't ask Carlito when I met him because I knew he was like a second gen, but I didn't know a lot about this history of his family.
Mm-hmm.
One of the challenges you face in wrestling is just doing all your history and getting to know everybody, because that's half the battle right there, you know. Because you don't want to like start using people's moves that are, you know, not yours, or that were used in a certain territory at a certain time, and you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I can't just go to wherever Carlito's from and start doing the backstabber everywhere. You know what
no.
I mean? They're gonna be like, that's his move. Yeah, he's like our fucking success story here. You know, shit like that. So, but you know, I did my research on Carlito and watched all my film. I actually watched him as a kid growing up, so it was kind of cool to like wrestle him. You know.
Again, you're making me sound very old. That's depression.
How old are you?
I'm 32, which I know isn't really old, but like when you start becoming older than most wrestlers, it kind of like, you know, it gets a bit worrying, especially when you look at when you look at your own physical shape and then you look at someone like 10 years younger and you're just like, oh God, like, yeah. What have I done?
Well, how do you feel physically?
No, to be honest, I'm fine. I, again, for someone who isn't remotely athletic, I haven't broken a bone or anything, but at the same time, I don't seem to have any physical problems. I have a feeling that by like the time I reach about 40, it's just all going to go to shit.
Now are you in shape or do you work out?
I remain active, and I do have an exercise bike. That was like a conscious decision this year because I do have a belly that I do need to get rid of. You know, I'm at the thing where I can walk up the massive flight of stairs, but I will be huffing and puffing by the time I get there, sort of thing. But you know, I always like instead of like a moving escalator, I will walk up it, sort of thing, and all that kind of thing. Because you know, I feel like I have to exercise and watch what I eat just to be this out of shape. So if I actually didn't watch what I eat, I would probably be, you know, just one of those people on a documentary that you see the front room gets taken out just so they can you know, be moved from a house, sort of thing. So when you were very young, when you first started watching wrestling, was it just stuff that your dad was heavily involved with, or were you kind of already exposing yourself to a lot of different stuff?
Okay, yeah, I get what you're saying. So, yeah, when I was really young, when he was alive, we would definitely watch his stuff on TV. And, you know, I'd always get upset because he was, you know, in the WWF, he was more or less of a heel character. And, you know, he had his antics and his chicken shit stuff that he did, you know. So I didn't like seeing him wrestle in a dress and all that, you know. But as far as growing up and getting older, I kind of fell out of it. Like I said, I don't know if I mentioned this earlier, but I wasn't a huge wrestling fan growing up just because it left a sour taste. It left a sour taste in my mouth.
That's, yeah, absolutely understand. And,
sorry for the dogs. Let them stop barking here.
It's okay.
It's the fucking mailman. excuse my French.
It's okay.
I know you're from the UK. I don't know if you speak French, but I speak a lot of French. At least she's not picking up the barking habit that I have. I just punted my dog. I'm gonna punt kick him again. Give him the old punt kick to the gut.
This will go in the outtakes.
I'm working on my heat. I'm working on giving heat. So I can kick my dog if I need to. All right. I guess you want to get kicked again, little boy.
I was speaking to Dalton Castle once, and he said one of his first exposures to wrestling was a yellow dog.
Really?
Yeah, and we spent a long time talking about yellow
dog. The yellow dog, my father?
Uh-huh.
That's hilarious.
We probably give yellow dog the yellow dog more airtime than he's ever had, but we had a lot of fun chatting about the yellow dog.
Nobody brings up the fucking yellow dog.
Was he ever unmasked? Like, I never saw the unmasking. Like,
come again?
Was he ever unmasked? Like, I know the point was obvious that it was meant to be.
I've seen a picture of them taking it off.
Oh wow! Okay.
I don't know if it was a backstage picture or if it was like in the ring or like by the. I don't know. I've seen a photo of him like pulling it off though. I think they did reveal it because eventually they had to reintroduce him to it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the fans kind of were in on it. I think it's funny. I think we look back at. Tell me if you agree with me on this. I think we look back at wrestling as like this perfectly kayfabe work back then that nobody knew, but like in all reality, they were doing the same thing we're doing today. Like they were running in bingo halls and shit, and they had like, you know what I mean? Like plenty of fans were not stupid, you know what I mean? Like not every fan was just a fucking kayfabe mark, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, like there's been smart fans since the beginning of time, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm sure plenty of people knew it was him under the mat, you know what I mean? Just the body size and then the way he moved. Yeah, he's very unique. Us Pillmans have a very unique body language and shoulder width, you know.
This was cut from the network, which I was a bit upset about. But I mean, political correctness and all that, I totally understand. But there's a match against Johnny B. Badd when he's the yellow dog. And, you know, in your dad's unmistakable voice, he just goes to the camera, "Johnny B. Badd, Johnny B. Gay." And I totally understand why that would be cut from. But the network.
Yeah, they don't cut it out, or they do?
And they do cut it out, but it's on the video, the original video. They're like due to technical transmission problems or something like that. And it's like, come on, we know you can't smart, you can't kayfabe us when it comes to yellow dog.
It's like, you know, gay is a word that, you know, we can whine about, but it's like people say it every day, you know. So it's like,
well, look,
what are you gonna do? You know?
Yeah, look, I'm gay, and it's just like I. You know, you when a child says, "Look, I'm not eating that potato. It's gay." It's like, you know, I'm not offended by that. You know.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Like when it's used in a context. But I guess Johnny B. Badd was. I guess if you look at the context, I guess he was a more of a flamboyant character.
Mm-hmm. Well, at the time,
you know. But I think, but you're right. I mean, it's entertainment. And like you said, you're someone who's gay, and you're not going to get offended every time somebody uses it. And if it's not used directly to offend you, you know what I mean? Like, some people just have no skin at all.
Yeah, dude, I think every gay character in wrestling has been evil. So, you know, like, I take no offense whatsoever from it. Like, I had this conversation with David Starr, who I'm sure you're familiar with. And I totally get it. As a Jewish wrestler, there was the anti-Semitic character on the indies who really caused a lot of offense. And then it kind of got me thinking about a lot of the sort of characters I grew up on who are largely, you know, foreign stereotypes and stuff like that. And it's just, I was like, oh God, like, I like Yokozuna. Does that make me racist? You know, and like, you know, I had to sort of ask David if it was okay to sort of like these sort of foreign stereotype characters. And he gave me a pass on that. So that, you know, that's okay. But
in order to have good guys, you have to have bad guys, right? In order to have smiles, you have to have sadness. You know what I mean? You can't. The world is a constant place of recycling energy, and if you're up in arms about, you know, people get trying, you know, people, you know, whether you call it cheap, call it whatever, shock value. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just need a nice emotional response, and there's an easy way to do that is with those archetypes, those foreigner archetypes, or those, like you said, anti-Semitic. Like, if David Starr gets to do a Jew gimmick, then why can't I do a Nazi gimmick? You know what I mean? Like, they're two sides of a coin, right?
No, I think the David's thing, though, was that he maybe even went too far with it being a gimmick, maybe, because David...
So we're talking about an actual performer that did this gimmick?
Yeah, and David started getting, like, abuse even from the audience and stuff like that, and I was just like, yeah, that's not good. Like,
So the audience is teaming with the Nazi guy.
Yeah, like, it's very small
pockets. Oh, was this in Europe or was this in the United States?
Very small pockets of it. I think it was in Europe. So maybe
there's a little bit more of an aggressive undertone there.
Yeah.
That I'm not aware with. But, you know, as far as the American audience goes, you know MJF, right?
Sorry?
Do you know who MJF is?
I don't.
Oh, Maxwell Jacob Friedman? Okay.
Okay.
Well, anyways, you don't know him, but he's a star. He's a pretty big star over here in the U.S. in the independent scene.
Okay.
He's wrestled David Starr a few times over here. But he's a Jew. He's Jewish as well.
Right.
Now, his gimmick is more or less that he's just like this rich kid. He doesn't like play up the fucking Star of David and stuff. But he does have the tattoo of the Star of David with a lion on him and shit. But, He's such a good heel, and he's very good at getting heat and stuff. Like he never wants to be a babyface ever, but he's the type of guy that would be willing to cross that line, and he's fully aware of his, so to speak, vulnerability. Because as a heel, you have to have that, right? You have to have that weakness where it's like, oh, you know, like. So you know what I mean? Like, so somebody calling him a Jew or like, you're just a rich Jew, like that would get a babyface pop. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because he's such an established heel, and he crosses the line with other people. So if somebody reciprocates that by crossing the line with him, it would be like a good receipt. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. In a psychology standpoint, in a match. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, the contextual, like who's wrestling. What fans are there, how far can we go? That's how ECW, that's how all those things succeeded, is because they knew their fan base, right? Mm-hmm. So, I'm not going to go, yeah.
Are we getting too deep for 10 in the morning, your time?
Oh, I don't know, it's fine. Yeah, I mean, you're right, maybe we are.
We are called Turn Chuckle. Like, that means, yeah, we're not, it's like Turnbuckle, but with a chuckle on there. You know, it's a ton of time and effort went into coming up with that name. As a musician, I'm always kind of interested, like, what music are you listening to at the moment?
For a while I was working, usually I just listen to music when I go to the gym, not really any other time. Because I find if you listen to music all day, you just get burnt out on music, you know.
This is true. Something I've had to try and sort of stop doing, because you kind of start analyzing it as well, and then it kind of becomes not fun.
Well, if you're somebody that like performs music, you probably listen to more music than me. You know what I mean? Like, I might watch more wrestling clips of a certain style than you because I study wrestling, right? But
yeah.
But generally, I just find that in any form of like a dopamine receptor, you know, like a video game or music or whatever, you know, it's gonna generally get stale if you use it too much, right?
So you don't really you don't play video games much either, or?
No, I do. I know I gotta. Basically, I know I got to get my breaks in, so I'll play a lot at one time, and then I'll go to wrestle on the weekend and be on the road, and there'll be a nice big gap before I get to play video games or just, you know, whatever.
When I go to
the gym, I just spam music, like, the whole time, and then I go to the tanning bed, and then, like, the rest of the evening, I don't listen to music. You know what I mean? Like, you just got to, you know, you don't want to be blown up on one thing all the time.
So I'm guessing you don't get much sun in your area then.
Huh?
You don't get much sunshine in your area to actually tan.
Oh no, we do. I use a tanning bed as well. It's just quicker, and I'm always on the go. But it is getting colder too, so I'll be using the tanning bed more because it's going to be harder to go outside and do stuff.
Mm. So do you can you watch wrestling at this point, like, sort of, like, leisurely, instead of, like, sort of watching it strictly to study it? Is that harder to do now?
I'd say I'm becoming more of a mark for things that I find that I like. You know, when I first started wrestling, I hadn't been watching it as a fan, so I had to first approach it as a student first.
Yeah.
So I started with as a student of the game, but then it took me a while to find out what kind of style I liked, and now I can kind of be a fan of that shit. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm. So is it? You know, you are fans of certain styles, but is it certain territories from the past, or is it more modern stuff generally that you're kind of watching?
I'd say as a millennial, I'm more attracted to the modern style of things, you know, the New Japan style.
Yeah.
But I also like the 90s New Japan and All Japan style, you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
Pretty much just, like, when I watch wrestling, I like to watch Japanese. When I do wrestling, I like to do lucha because you don't get hurt.
That's fair.
So, it's more or less, you know, it's more fluid and when you wrestle as lucha. Mm-hmm. But when I watch it, I don't really care to watch lucha because there's no psychology at all.
Mm. So,
really none.
I'm probably going a little bit too outside of my area now in terms of wrestling, but with lucha stuff generally, I'm guessing at this point, do most wrestlers still wear masks? Or I know a lot of wrestlers don't anymore, but do you think that takes away or means that there's not as much need for the psychology as well because facial expressions aren't needed? Or
the way I was taught was that we have a lot of masked luchadors in our MLW locker room. So we have a large number of them. We got a bunch of Lucha Underground guys. We've got Pentagon.
Yeah.
We've got Phoenix. We got that Dragon guy. We've got L.A. Park, and we've got L.A. Park Jr., which is El Hijo de L.A. Park. So we've got the OG L.A. Park, his son. We've got fucking this Puma guy. We got a bunch of masked luchadors. So I think that style is definitely not hurting right now.
Mm.
I think it's thriving as far as, you know, knowing when to place their matches on the show, you know. There's an Americanized style of lucha that Pentagon and Rey Fénix have mastered where they are more, they are having matches with more of an American psychology and also a stronger character presence, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Pentagon would be the character of the two, and then Rey Fénix would be like the in-ring, you know, of the two, right?
So I'm guessing with mannerisms and stuff like that, they kind of generally would have to be more over the top anyway to be able to emote to the audience. So,
for instance, you would be more dramatic with your body language if you're a masked wrestler. That's how I was taught.
Mm-hmm.
I was taught a good
a good practice is to actually wrestle as a masked wrestler, so you can learn to tell messages to the audience with your body and not your voice.
I've always been a
talker. So, you know, I've always been a guy that, you know, interacts with the crowd and has very good facials. So I would never wear a mask for the type of wrestler I am. You know, I'm the wrestler that I want to be on TV. I want people to see, you know, how I look and things. But definitely a very, yeah.
Can you guys stop? Don't put you in the city, don't kill you.
Sorry, there's only, you know.
That's okay. What's his name?
There's only so many places I can go to record, and they'll just come in there and bark too.
That's okay. What are the names?
Lucky and Lewis.
Lucky and Lewis.
Lucky's the one barking.
Other brothers?
No, they're not related as dogs. They're both fucking mutts we found on the street. My aunt, like, rescues dogs, and here we are.
That's really cool.
Our family's actually from Wales. So I'm only second generation American.
Oh, really? I did not. That's really cool. So at some point, are you looking to sort of trace your sort of heritage a little bit, or like does that side of it like fascinate you at all?
It, you know, it kind of does. I'd like to visit Wales sometime. But at the same time, I'm not like trying to make a gimmick out of it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't really care. I'm not gonna post on the internet my fucking online family tree and be all emotional. I'd say half of my ethnicity is Welsh, and then the other half is my dad or my grandpa. And I think he was in the American Army, and they were stationed over there for World War II.
Oh, wow.
And that's how my grandma got brought back as like basically a war bride.
they just want that airtime. They're going to get royalties now for being on air.
No, they just need attention. Need to be pet and stuff. Now they're fighting.
Well, at least your dogs like each other. My cats despise the fuck out of each other. I do appreciate you checking out the Instagram, because as you can tell, I'm a bit of a hardcore WWF collector, especially of like mid-90s stuff. It's amazing that I have friends, considering how much of a nerd I am. But it was really cool to show you the Shotgun Saturday Night t-shirt that I got, because after they moved out of the nightclubs, and I loved those shows, it was really your dad who carried that show on commentary. He really added a fresh feel to everything that he did in WWF. And I know it sounds like I'm just sucking up now. But, you know, WWF was largely what we got over here. You know, we did get Nitro, and we got WCW in the early 90s. As well, but WWF was what really turned me on to wrestling. But some of my earliest WCW memories, and one of my favorite tag matches of all time, is Pillman and Zank against the Midnight Express.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, that's really cool to hear.
You've been a good
host today. You know, very knowledgeable young man.
Thank you very much. Hey, young man, I'll take that. But so is it kind of? I guess it's still very cool to you to see, like, your dad's action figure on, you know, on pegs and stuff like that. Because I love the latest Flying Brian Pillman figure that came out about a year or so ago. Does that kind of...
I'm wondering, you know, they keep coming out with his figures, but I'm wondering, as they're not putting him in the games as much, what, you know, why would they not put him in the games? Because he used to be a DLC, and I'm sure he made him a lot of money, because we got a lot of money when the DLC dropped for him. So, or at least my mom did, you know, my mom gets all the royalties from that stuff.
But
she doesn't always share it.
Boo. Well, I do love WWE 13 still, because for the Attitude Era roster, it's the first game that's come out since Attitude that actually does it better. You know, everyone's on there that you could possibly want, including your dad. You know, there's a few legends that I always wanted to play as since they introduced the whole Legends deal, and your dad was one of them. You know, I still have Super Brawl for the SNES, and the fact that you could do a sunset flip off the top ropes, mind-blowing to me. I hope everyone's enjoying my interview with Brian Pillman Jr. I'll be back in a jiffy.
The Divorce Album is a unique new concept from one of my favourite artists, Secret Friend. The Divorce Album is a unique concept split into two sides, Mine and Yours. Mine features six new songs from Secret Friend, and Yours features those same six songs performed by six other artists. All of the songs are breakup songs, but let's face it, the best songs usually are. Featured artists include Taylor Locke, Sam Robson, Carla Kane, Wyatt Funderburk, Willie Wisely, a certain Roger Joseph Manning Jr., and many more. The Divorce Album is available now from your favourite streaming or download service. For more information, go to www.thedivorcealbum.com. I hope these questions have been okay. Because, like, sort of...
No, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's kind
yeah.
of... I always end up...
Oh, with... man, this is day and night from yesterday's podcast. I get 100 a day, not a day, but 100 a week, requests to do one.
I'm sure you do. And the thing
I'm
is...
I'm, literally every citizen in the United States has a podcast today, except for me. if I started a podcast, I'd get... probably tons of fucking listeners because so many people are podcast nerds these days.
Well, that's the thing as well. You've got contacts as well, so you can get the sweet ass guests all the time. And
Jericho owes me one.
Well, that's the thing. It's kind of hard to ask original questions when you do so many interviews, but I can only really ask it from my point of view as a fan. And I just hope you had a lot of fun because I did, and I'm sure the listeners will enjoy listening to it.
Oh, yeah, I had a lot of fun, and it was nice. You didn't ask a bunch of those basic marquee questions were you in the house when Stone Cold pulled out a gun, or when your dad pulled out a gun in Stone Cold?
Well, before
I'm I was there.
Before I do let you go, though, there's a podcast that I'm a huge, huge fan of that you won't know, but it's in the UK, and he has a book of emergency questions, and I want to ask you one of these questions just to see what you would... which you would prefer. Would you rather have a hand made out of ham, or would you rather have an armpit that dispenses sun cream? And the ham hand can replenish, so you could potentially feed the world with it and stuff like that, but
people have to bite your hand.
They would have to bite your hand, and you'd probably get cats following you everywhere, and
ham hand, or I would take the lotion.
You can use it to sort of, look shiny before you come through the curtain at a show and stuff like that.
Yeah. I actually sweat so much that I have no problem being shiny.
Well, on that note, on that very sweaty note, where can people find you and get your merch and all that kind of stuff?
You can find me on Flying Brian Jr. on Twitter and Flying Brian 41 on Instagram. I have two streams of merchandise out on Major League or on Pro Wrestling Tees. One is via MLW and one is via Brian Pillman Jr. So I have two wrestling tees available with MLW, and I have two wrestling tees available on my own stream. So check them out. Check out my page first, and then head on over to the Hart Foundation page. Or the MLW Hart Foundation T-shirt page.
The designs are cool as well, especially for those who are fans of your dad, particularly as well.
That's the best-selling shirt in MLW history.
There you go. So, Brian, thank you for spending a little bit of time with me, and see to the dogs. Do they need fed? I guess they need fed because it's the morning, isn't it? So.
Yeah.
Probably fed and walked, I guess. But
they're fed, they've been walked, they've been fed, now they're just energetic, and hell, my dog's acting the best out of all of them, so.
Well, they will get credit on the show, so.
Awesome.
Yeah. Thank you again, and
cool.
We will maybe do this again if you're up for it at some point. When more stuff's happened in your life. Hopefully not injuries though,
Of course, yeah.
Okay.
No, we'll update later when there's more to talk about, but yeah, for sure.
That's great.
We covered some good stuff today.
Thanks to Brian Pinman Jr. That was a lot of fun. Very accommodating guy. His dog got involved quite a bit. you know, he was, he was doing about 10 things at once. So, you know, I know he's like a massively busy dude, and but he was a lot of fun to chat to. Such a chilled out guy as well. Just,
yeah, man.
You know, very accommodating with his time, with his answers and everything. And, you know, there will be more from Brian, as we chatted about after the interview as well. It was one of those things that it's so early on in his career, you know, there is a lot more to talk about now, you know what I mean? So when the next interview happens, you know, there'll be so much more stuff. You know, we're going to, you know, taking fan questions eventually as well when we start doing like more of the newer shows as well, because we want your involvement as well, and we really appreciate that you've liked, subscribed, or done whatever the kids do in 2019 when it comes to all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
I was hoping you'd have something to add.
Nah.
Obviously not. No, it's
nothing.
That means the interview was perfect, basically. So yes, coming next week, actually on Monday, is Sid, which is amazing, and it just shows you the massive range of names that we're getting as well. But we don't pick names lightly. You know, we are fans of these names, and you know, guys like Brian Pillman Jr. are getting me into watching new wrestling, which is something that I haven't really done for like quite a while as well. And
he's great to watch, man. I absolutely love it. I really want to. For me, it's not only in him. Do you know what it is as well? It's the fact that he was doing the whole like touched upon it, the whole New Era Hart Foundation.
Yeah.
Team with Smith Jr. and Teddy Hart. It's a kind of thing that where I'm really interested in seeing where, if they can develop that further in the future and where they want to go with that, or if it's like a sort of just for a little bit, you know, in the indies, or whether it's something they can properly build upon. It's quite exciting when things like that happen, because it's like, where can they go with this? What can happen with it? And yeah, this I'm a sucker for all that kind of stuff, because it's a bit of a heart back to our time frame that we.
Oh, absolutely. You know, so, and you know, if it takes a bit of nostalgia to get me watching again, then so be it. And I think a lot of the wrestlers know that as well, you know, by using like sort of old school logos on their merch or whatever, or, you know, referencing the past, but not in a sort of purely nostalgic way. You can sort of bring it into the present, as you know they are doing so brilliantly. So yes, yeah. After the Sid interview, a complete 180, Paul Diamond, aka Kato, aka Max Moon. What a nice guy he was. We did this interview approximately a week before his massive surgeries, both knees and a shoulder replacement. You know, because if you've seen Kato, Max Moon, Paul Diamond, Venom, all that kind of stuff, you know how athletic he was in the ring and some of the crazy stuff that he would used to do. So we cover a wide range of topics, everything from the AWA to obviously WWF, his stint in ECW, you know, all of his characters, and it was a lot of fun. And I mean, as a fan of 93 in particular, getting to chat to bloody Max Moon, and I know Conan and all that, and that does get talked about, the whole Conan thing, but to talk to the definitive Max Moon was quite an honour. So I'm looking forward to that one.
I'm over the moon about this one. It's one of those really, really, it's just one of those cool little things. It's, you know, you don't expect to come up, when you think about all the names that you can potentially get on for an interview, and then all the ones that are going to be realistic, and all the ones that are potential pipe dreams. You know, we've got our own lists and things, but this is kind of one of those characters, because I'm going to call it as a character. You know, it's no disrespect to Paul as the wrestler Paul and the person Paul, but I was going to say I'm purely in this for Max Moon, but I'm not. That's a lie as well. I'm here for Kato as well, because the Orient Express, man, like they were probably If memory serves me right, I think they were the first tag team I ever saw wrestle. Then that was against the Rockers, and I think it was the first tag team I ever saw wrestle from WWE, WWF, and I thought the Rockers were cool and everything like that, but I actually thought that the Orient Express looked cooler. I've got this fond memory of watching them, like just this whole sort of, it was the mystique and the whole, they've got this trippy Japanese manager. Well,
and the absolutely stereotypical Japanese music. Like number 78 on the keyboard,
chopsticks or whatever. It was on your Casio. But
insane reason gets dubbed over on the network. Can't be copyrighted. So, you know. But
can't be any worse than Dusty Rhodes' theme being overdubbed with the Family Fortunes theme.
Oh no, Wheel of Fortune.
Wheel of Fortune.
Maybe when we start talking about our subjects at great length, we may talk about overdubbed music on the network, because
it
does my head in. If you want to hear me get angry, that'll be fun.
Just to hop back very quickly there, he's a great dude. You can tell he's a great dude. He's got a lot to talk about. I didn't actually know that he was trained by Oliver Malenko's clan.
I didn't
realize that, and that's It's cool when you unravel bits like that. I mean, you know, I could easily go onto the interwebs and find said information out easy enough. But it's nice when it comes about as part of the discussion that we're having, that brought to my attention that he was trained by all of the Malenkos. And I was like, that's wicked. And that's after playing a bit of footy as well, like soccer or whatever you want to call it. Wherever you're listening from, it's, you know, that whole earlier career prior to him being trained by the Malenkos and becoming a wrestler, becoming Kato.
and if you watch...
That's a great series that they should have on the network, shouldn't it? Becoming Kato.
I could be very short-lived, that one.
It'd be true to form. Anyway, carry on.
That's very true. And if you have a YouTube... Well, I was going to say, if you have a YouTube account, bloody hell, right? You don't need a YouTube account. If you've got fingers and eyes, I think you'll be fine. Go on YouTube and watch our Hands Off the Merchandise series, where we are completing a Serbian sticker album from 1992, which is Max Moon Heavy. And we get very excited when we get some Max Moon stickers, including the shiny.
They bloody love Max Moon over there, man. He's on the front cover and everything.
I know. It is crazy. I mean,
he's next to Hogan on the front cover.
I know. There's a poster magazine as well from early 93. I mean, we're going to be reviewing all this merch because I've got too much junk in my room, basically. So we're going to go through all of that. And also, I mean, I didn't bring this up, but I don't know if you'll... probably won't remember this, but Neil Buchanan on Art Attack did a collage where he got two pictures and sort of very thin strips, and then put one strip of one picture, one strip of another picture, and it was kind of like this weird trippy magic eye kind of thing. And one picture was something like a cow in a field, and the other picture was Max Moon.
Was it really?
It was quite weird. We're going to have to try and find that episode of Art Attack, I think. But I have had this chat with friends who have also seen this. I wasn't dreaming it, because it does sound insane. Max Moon, you know, he wasn't there long, but he left an indelible, you know, footprint. Would footprint be the right word? I don't know. Indelible memories in my childhood, because as Russell Crapp would say, he was dressed like a ribbed condom. But, you know, and that will stick in your mind forever. You know, it's one of the more colourful, garish outfits that there's ever been. And by WWF standards, that's quite, quite an achievement. But, Max Moon.
I fucking love Max Moon, man.
he does talk to me in alien language because he's from outer space. And I do put it through like a modulator and it comes out in English. So don't worry about that.
To be fair, he's, you know, from outer space by way of Japan.
I know, with me, mate, I was just like, guess who I've got on the podcast? You know, and he was like, who? And I was like, well, everyone's favourite Japanese, space alien. That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Bob Backlund. And sadly not Bob Backlund. But yeah, no, Max Moon, Sid coming up, and many other names. Which I'm sure will keep you entertained.
Yeah.
So yeah, very good. And I think that's pretty much it for this week.
See ya.
Bugger off.
Goodbye.
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 Goodbye.